Well, it's interesting. When I started researching for the book, you know, I stumbled upon Professor David Blanchflower's work on the U-shaped happiness curve. Now, he's an economist, but it's pretty fascinating when you think of the fact that, you know, been around the world, 132 countries, they're measuring, you know, 15 different indices of happiness, everything from fatigue and low mood and depression, whatnot. And across all these countries, you know, high socioeconomic classes, low socioeconomic classes, men, women, there's this dipping of happiness that happens around 40, 41. And I was a little shocked to find it continues on until the age of 47 before happiness starts to sort of pick back up again. And, you know, that a lot of that, again, we can bring back to this idea of, again, this busyness, this hecticness, we're trying to balance and juggle so many balls. And I think, as you've mentioned, I think with me in previous podcasts, you know, some of those balls are going to drop, right? Like, that's just the reality of it all. But that piece around mindset, if we think about the fact that, okay, we may already be in a situation where mindset is being taxed. If you look at the research around lack of sleep and how, you know, midlife, hey, lack of sleep and midlife, that goes hand in hand. And we know that if you don't sleep a lot, well, it gets a lot harder to disengage from negative thoughts.
Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Walker. As a former naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I align the intersection of personal performance, purpose, and innovative thinking in badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. Anthropology is the study and science of what makes an entrepreneur think, feel, and perform in a path compelled by a vision for helping others, solving problems, while building a life on your own terms. Together, we are exploring the health, mindset, and strategies that distinguish the world's best entrepreneurs. This is the Anthropology Podcast. Welcome to episode 223 of the Anthropology Podcast. I am Dr. Megan Walker, super excited to be hanging out with one of my oldest friends. He's not old. He is in his peak 40s, the author of Peak 40. He is Dr. Mark Bubbs. And Dr. Bubbs is a naturopathic doctor. He's a nutritionist. He is the lead nutrition consultant for Basketball Canada, helps all of our Olympic athletes perform at their best. And today we're talking about his new book, Peak 40. And we're getting into what does it actually take to be in a state of maximized energy and mindset when we are in this, I'm going to say, really tough decade. We're taking care of kids. We're taking care of parents. We've got all the things on the go. Mark himself is the father of three amazing girls. He's got a busy career, and this work was as much personal as it was for all of us. We had a fascinating discussion about the things that we need to do at what could be and should be the most exciting phase of our life so that we are on top of our energy, on top of our mindset, and on top of our game. I'm super excited to introduce you to my friend, Dr. Mark Bubbs. Dr. Mark Bubbs, welcome back to the Anthropology Podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me back, Meg. Appreciate it.
Well, this is going to be a great conversation because I'll just let the cat out of the bag early. You have a new book coming out. It's called The Peak 40. And we were both just discussing this. We're like, there's nothing we need more right now in 2021 as you know, people in our 40s who are managing all the things that happen in 40 plus a pandemic, to like really kind of hit pause and reevaluate how do we actually get access back to our life and to our happiness and to our energy and to a decade that everyone at least described to me as being like one of the best decades of your life. So I feel like the timing on this book is so perfect. Before we delve into it, and I have a ton of questions for you, and I'm like, oh, this couldn't come at a better time. Share with everybody a little bit about you, your background, and the awesome work that you do in the world?
Well, listen, yeah, thanks for the intro. And it's definitely one of those times when midlife, when we're like, yeah, I'm ready to tackle everything, but there seems to be a million and one different things between, you know, the work commitments, the home commitments, the social commitments, and everything else. And you know, for me, working in as a performance nutritionist, as a naturopath, you know, director of nutrition with Canada Basketball, so we support our guys getting ready for the Olympics and as they play in the NBA. And there's certain, you know, themes and protocols you use with those guys. And all of a sudden, start looking at our coaches and the performance staff who are in their mid 30s to mid 40s, and you know, we're all struggling, right? It's like, how can we simplify things? How can we help, you know, raise the playing field so that we can actually make it through these grueling schedules? And, you know, these days I split my time working on the athletic side and then consulting and, of course, working in general practice. And so, yeah, I mean, this book really came out of the idea of midlife is busy, it's hectic, it's stressful. And, you know, certainly there are strategies where you can weigh your food and count your macros for a period of time, but most people don't want to do that forever. So what's the exit plan? How do we build in some systems so that we can actually feel better, look better, achieve the things we want to do, and ultimately, you know, be able to make the biggest impact in our jobs and also at home?
I love that you say this. We all struggle. And I think that's the truth. And part of why I was excited to have this conversation is that, you know, despite having this last year where we could focus on our health and despite having all the tools and knowledge and information, I'm sitting in my podcast studio right now with like one piece of biohacking equipment over there and another one over there. Before we got on the call, I was like, Mark, I'm actually tired. Like, I'm tired for real. And I know we haven't had a break and we haven't had a lot of other things, but what in your estimation and what you're seeing, like what is at the crux of that? And how do you see us getting out?
Well, it's interesting. When I started researching for the book, you know, I stumbled upon Professor David Blanchflower's work on the U-shaped happiness curve. Now, he's an economist, but it's pretty fascinating when you think of the fact that, you know, been around the world, 132 countries, they're measuring, you know, 15 different indices of happiness, everything from fatigue and low mood and depression, whatnot. And across all these countries, you know, high socioeconomic classes, low socioeconomic classes, men, women, there's this dipping of happiness that happens around 40, 41. And I was a little shocked to find it continues on until the age of 47 before happiness starts to sort of pick back up again. And, you know, that a lot of that, again, we can bring back to this idea of, again, this busyness, this hecticness, we're trying to balance and juggle so many balls. And I think as you've mentioned, I think with me in previous podcasts, you know, some of those balls are going to drop, right? Like that's just the reality of it all. But that piece around mindset, if we think about the fact that, okay, we may already be in a situation where mindset is being taxed. If you look at the research around lack of sleep and how, you know, midlife, hey, lack of sleep and midlife, that goes hand in hand. And we know that if you don't sleep a lot, well, it gets a lot harder to disengage from negative thoughts. So now all of a sudden, that loop around, okay, what am I going to have for breakfast? Or I get home after a busy day, should I have a, you know, why don't I have a glass of wine? Okay, why don't I have half the bottle? Like these types of things. And of course, with the pandemic, we've all experienced how, you know, things can unravel easily in a sense of whether it's the 10 or 20 extra pounds, whether it's the low energy, whether it's all of a sudden your blood sugar levels are too high or your lipid panel's not looking so good and your doctor wants you on medications and now you realize you need to do something. That mindset piece has really fascinated me because if we don't have some tactics to start to support that, it gets really hard to change somebody's habits because it's like, well, what are we orienting them towards? Why are we, you know, it's hard to just tell yourself, oh, eat better tomorrow or go exercise. We know from all the best psychologists that no matter who you are, that strategy doesn't work very well in the long run.
I've been interested in this too, because I've been listening to a lot of health influencers through the pandemic. And to the point that I'm getting actually frustrated because they're like, you just need to exercise and you just need to pick up a kettlebell. And I was like, and all the information is here on my feed for you to do it. Like, come on, people. And it's not a lack of information that I think that we are struggling with. It's a lack of cohesive strategy and having confidence in the strategy people are talking about. And it's accessibility. It's that, okay, cool. But how do I do that? Like, how do I do it on a granular level? And I want to talk through some of the elements of your book, but let's actually start with that. Like, how do we go from, okay, here are all the cool things you could do and you can read the 150 pages to do it. But like, how do we get people to be like, I'm in, I'm going to take action.
Yeah. And that's a great question. And working with people one-to-one for almost 20 years now, you know, the toughest part for the client to grasp is that when we get to the roadblock, that's when the learning happens. But as clients, we always want to have that progression going. Hey, the weight loss is coming. Everything's fantastic. But the roadblocks is where we actually take, you know, we attack head on what the actual challenges are. And no matter what dietary strategy you pick, if we're focusing on nutrition, you're going to hit a roadblock, right? There's no magic diet. And so then it comes back to the fact that we're going to have to change some behaviors. And as humans, we are more creatures of habit and set in our ways than maybe we realize. And so, you know, this is kind of going to the back of the book, but that mindset piece of saying, you know, okay, well, what are my values? And that's something that we actually think we know all the time. Like, we think we have an understanding of what our values are, but how many of us actually take the time? And men obviously are worse at this than women might be in terms of actually doing it, but taking the time to say, hey, you know, here's a list of words. What are my values? And these are techniques that our performance coaches at Canada Basketball use with teams to start to create a cohesive, you know, culture. And it was a great example. Bryce Tully, who's the mental performance coach for the women's national team in Canada, who are off to the Olympics in Tokyo. You know, there was a pre-tournament that they were at, and the coach really wanted the team to wear all their Canada gear on the bus. And, you know, despite the fact that obviously the girls come out of the locker room with their Canada gear on and look professional and whatnot, but they wanted to feel more relaxed on the bus. So they couldn't understand why this coach was so getting bent out of shape over the fact that the ladies did not want to wear their Canada gear. And so he actually, you know, paused for a minute and at Bryce's suggestion explained to the team that, you know, when he was young and growing up, the biggest thing he ever wanted to do was represent Team Canada. And he had to work his tail off to actually do it. And when he achieved it, he said, well, when they gave me that jersey, I mean, you would have had to like tear it out off my hands because I wanted to wear it. I was so proud. And now once the team understood where he was coming from, right now, all of a sudden the values align and then the friction's removed. And then, you know, they resolved that. The girl said, okay, this is great. We're going to, you know, wear our jerseys on the bus, et cetera. So this idea that if we can start to understand where our values at, it becomes a lot easier to then highlight to a client. And this is like, doesn't matter if you play in the WNBA, NBA, or the rest of us just trying to feel better. If we start to highlight that, hey, these behaviors over here, do you feel like they're in line with that value that you have over there? And this is nice because it becomes very obvious when you point it out. And yeah. So rather than the practitioner having to sort of wag the finger or crack the whip and provide that external motivation, we begin to reframe things. So we've got more internal motivation from the client who's now starting to. So I think that's one of the techniques to start with of reexamining, you know, taking that 10, 15, 20 minutes to reexamine, you know, what your values are, because then it becomes, you know, your North Star becomes much clearer, and then it becomes much more obvious when we're starting to sail off in a different direction.
I think that is so true. And we talk about this a lot. And like the reason we talk about health and mindset on a podcast that some say is about business, or we talk about business on a podcast and entrepreneurship on a podcast, some people say is about health, is because I really just think there's this triangulation of values that we can put our best work into the world when we're putting our best selves forward. And so to that end, I know you have a whole system that you outline in the book. And right at the beginning, you talk about this idea of like, let's master your morning. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you're referring to there? And please don't tell me it's getting up at 4:30 in the morning, gung ho, to grind it out. Because I agree with you on this. I'm excited to hear your perspective.
No, for sure, and I'm glad you bring up, you know, the entrepreneurial lifestyle because and entrepreneurs, because this is so topical as well, of being able to support your own health to be able to go out and perform, because every day, you know, a bit like an athlete, you've got to go out and win the day and achieve, right? Because there's no automatic salary coming in. You've got to find a way to get it done. And so you need to be, you know, you need to increase your own resiliency. And breakfast is a really interesting topic because over the last few years, the University of Bath in the UK in England has done loads of research around breakfast. And of course, fasting and intermittent fasting and time-restricted feeding, all very popular. And those strategies can surely be effective. But it's interesting now when they're coming out with more research showing, well, you can have different effects if you're lean versus overweight or obese when you skip breakfast, right? Those people who are struggling with weight gain and obesity can actually have an exaggerated blood sugar and inflammatory response when they don't eat breakfast. And something called the second meal effect means that when they eat lunch, if somebody who's overweight skips breakfast, they actually get an exaggerated glucose response to lunch. And so it's interesting how context drives a lot of these conversations. But when we're reading stuff online or we're listening to a friend, we tend to just apply that strategy to ourselves and, you know, cross our fingers and hopefully it works. And so the idea around Master Your Morning is this idea of like, let's get you off let's find the right breakfast for you. You know, the second piece is, can we trim any, you know, snacking, any mindless snacking? Because, you know, for most of us, getting from 8 a.m. to noon, we don't really need any fuel. I mean, we might feel like some fuel. It might be nice to have a little treat or a snack. But, you know, even if you're 10% body fat or 12% body fat, you know, you've still got 30,000 calories on your body. You could run 8 marathons. And so if we struggle to get from breakfast to lunch sitting at our desk, there's more going on than the actual need for fuel. And so, you know, master your morning is the concept of, let's try to automate as many things with our diet as we can, so we can start to eliminate the food decisions. Because we want you to live a little. We want you to enjoy the weekend. We want you to have that glass of wine and everything else, but we don't want to be making food decisions all day long, because that's not a recipe for success.
How important is food in the grand scheme? I know you have this bias with your nutritionist, but how important is food relative to the other factors that we could talk about in terms of exercise with respect to health? Is it the biggest part of the pie? Is it context again? What's your perspective?
Again, I think working with athletes really highlights, like, we look at some football players who consume, you know, a massive amount of calories, a massive amount of ultra processed food to intake the amount of energy they need to deal with the accelerations and the decelerations and the physical contact. And despite being, you know, technically obese, their metabolic profiles and their blood tests look fantastic. So the idea that you can't out-exercise a bad diet, you know, is really not true. I mean, eventually it will typically catch up with you. And that's what you see when a lot of these players retire. And, you know, in the book, we talk a bit about retired players and how their glucose levels go up and the risk factors for heart disease and things like that. And so, you know, when I think about what's important, we see if we talk even kind of recovery to build that resiliency piece, like nutrition, exercise, and then that mental, emotional health are three key pillars. And this is, again, pretty interesting, because at the highest level of pro sport, this is becoming more and more the norm of incorporating this mental, emotional stress. Because in sport, you talk about training load in the sense of, like, how much did you lift or how much did you exercise in the week? But if your emotional stress load is high, that counts towards that total load. And I think that's something that, again, entrepreneurs and whatnot can resonate with, because, hey, it's great to be busy and getting things done. But if the stressors are mounting from all angles, we've got to figure out a way to be able to recover from that. And you know, to your question, if we can get those nutrition, that exercise, and for most of us, it's the sleep bucket. If we can start to upgrade those, you know, things will get better.
Okay, so let's talk about that sleep bucket, because I feel like that's either the area where everyone's like, oh yeah, I got that, no problem. Or they're like, but what else? Like, what else assuming I'll never sleep again, what else can I be doing? But let's actually just delve into the sleep piece and how critical that is metabolically, how important it is from a recovery perspective. What do you have to say to those of us looking to live our peak 40s about sleep? What's the bottom line?
Well, this is the trouble with peak 40, is that there's no sleep, right? Especially if you've got little kids at home, then all of a sudden, you know.
So true.
You sleep. I haven't slept well in 8 years, you know. No, I mean, this is where sleep's important. And you see the best athletes in the world know about sleep. They know it's good for performance, but the sleep scientists will quickly tell you they still struggle to actually get them to do it. Right? That's the missing piece now, is the application. And so that's with the rest of us too. It's like, well, how do we, you know, you get a lot of head nodding from your clients, but it's like, well, wait a minute, you're still at 6.5 hours. How do we, you know, so getting to that minimum of 7 is definitely priority number one. But I think one of the interesting things when we look again at that, some of that breakfast research that comes out, is that, and then again, I'm a coffee lover here, so I'm going to preempt this. If you get a short sleep and you have coffee first thing in the morning as a way to kind of wake yourself up and boost yourself for the day, that again just blows up your blood sugar levels, right? You're getting a much more exaggerated glucose response. Some of the work by James Betts and his group at, again, Bath University. And so just delaying that, which sounds counterintuitive, but if you're someone who is running on all cylinders, get up in the morning, try to get through those first few hours, have your breakfast, you know, maybe some water, maybe a green tea or something to keep it a little bit, you know, don't push that gas pedal down so hard, and then have that coffee a little later in the morning, and you actually get a much better, you know, blood sugar response. And you say, well, okay, well, why does that matter to me? You know, if you're the client, and this is where, if we're already up to this, like a roller coaster, if you're already going up that glucose roller coaster to start the day, now you're going to be up and down throughout the day, which impacts decision making, which leads to more kind of anxiety type, you know, feelings and struggling with concentration. And so if you notice yourself getting more edgy, then that's oftentimes, you know, you got to circle back to that, you know, how much caffeine are we taking in? Can we get the sleep in? Because I'm sure, you know, it is amazing. If you get a good night's sleep and get yourself off to a good start, all of a sudden those big problems that you thought were big problems, now all of a sudden, you know, you're crossing those off the list pretty quick.
I've literally started new companies on days where I got to sleep through the whole night. I'm like, that idea, we're executing on that. I regret it a week later when my kids crawl back into bed with me. But no, it's game changing. Let's get more granular on the sleep piece with respect to deep sleep, REM sleep. I feel like there's a huge percentage of us walking around with our data trackers with respect to sleep. What is, one, your perspective on tracking sleep metrics? And two, which ones do you think are most important?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really interesting to see. I mean, we've been using Aura for the last 5 years or so with Canada Basketball. And now obviously you see the explosion and people tracking and observing. And I think observation is the biggest key of trying to find those trends. You know, there's always going to be some error built in. But, you know, I think the big one for most people is around, okay, your resting heart rate when you have a good night's sleep, let's say it's 50. And then that night you have a glass of wine. Now all of a sudden it's 62. Okay, not the end of the world. Now all of a sudden you had half a bottle of wine at 75, right? And so the amount of nervous system stress that's going on to just the extra work your body's having to do, we can start to make those links now. Well, okay, I woke up in the morning, I'm feeling a little bit more fatigued, a little bit more groggy. And again, you know, during the COVID red wine and Netflix last year, it's something that is—
The therapeutic intervention of
heavily caffeinating in the morning and then taking the edge off in the evening, you know, that adds up. And so I think that's one that's really nice to highlight, because then it can reinforce to people that, hey, you know what? Maybe you want to have a glass of wine every night, but for some people that gets a little bit more than a glass of wine. And if it's every single night and you're struggling with sleep, an easy place to start, and when I say easy, it's sort of air quotes, simple, but maybe not easy, is to try to say, hey, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Monday to Thursday, we're not going to have anything, right? We're going to start to switch that habit up. And, you know, pre-selecting those days helps if we want to avoid that decision fatigue, especially, we know that compliance goes down as the day gets longer. So your compliance is lowest at the end of the day when you're sitting on the couch and wondering whether or not you should have a glass of wine or not. So, you know, that's a good place to start on the sleep front. And then I would say, you know, you do have to watch in terms of your personality type, because if we get a little too fixated on tracking and getting really deep into the numbers, you know, it can go the other way on certain individuals in terms of starting to ramp up anxiety and things. And so, you know, it's always nice to figure out why you're using a certain tool, right? So what's that KPI that we're trying to shift? Because then we can know whether or not this is good, because soon we'll be able to track every physiological function all day long. And what, you know, where's the signal versus all the noise that it's providing?
Right. Do you have metrics that you track that you're like, these are metrics that matter? Like, if you're going to look at any numbers, and I have some friends, I have one friend in particular, her husband's got all the gear, and she's like, I don't want to know a single piece of data. Like, I'm just going to tell you if I feel good in the morning, and that's all I want to know. Whereas he's like, okay, I want to understand all of the pieces. I kind of fall halfway in between, I think mostly because I'm curious, but I want to know from your perspective, what metrics matter, health overall, that you're like, if you knew these five things, you would be able to make better decisions.
Yeah, I think that's a great point around that. It's like the artist versus the mechanic, in the sense of like the people who like to get very granular and have the Excel sheets out and know every last number. And then those people who want to, you know, feel it a little bit more. And I think even for the artists, quote unquote, or the feelers, it's good to sometimes go through that process of tracking something for a month, let's say, so you know if it's, you know, the sleep piece. So you can appreciate that when you do have a good night's sleep, it is this type of heart rate, or if you do have that red wine, it impacts you that way. So, you know, resting heart rate is a really good one. Morning resting heart rate, you know, that's for longevity. If you're able to, if you have that heart rate 70, 60, 70, 80 even, and you start to see it going up over 10 beats, then you're under stress. And most people wouldn't know that unless you're, you know, tracking to a certain degree. You know, if you want to get more granular, HRV becomes interesting, because we look at, you know, longevity data. And again, we see, you know, that tracks pretty nicely. And of course, with longevity, we see cardiovascular fitness tracks with longevity. And so that ties into that piece around, you know, you don't need to become a marathoner, but what is your aerobic fitness, right? Like, could you run a mile if you had to, or, you know, some of these types of things that we can start to put a metric on. And again, just boosting that aerobic fitness, we start to see that's a big shifter for, you know, improves nervous system function recovery. So resting heart rate, fasting glucose in the morning. I mean, that's a little bit trickier to measure, but, you know, that's one where we see, again, you know, if we get less than five, you know, when we look at some of that longevity data, is a really nice place to be. And of course, fasting glucose response, if you have a bad night's sleep, if you're training intensely, if you're getting sick, it's again, it reacts acutely to things as well. But, you know, whether it's when you go in for your annual physical and you're getting your fasting glucose, whether some people, the more, you know, the mechanics want to get a pinprick test or the CGM on to see what that is. And CGMs, that continuous glucose monitor, can be nice because it does provide that just passive data collection, which
it is fun.
Is a nice way to do it.
I had fun with my continuous glucose monitor a few months ago. I didn't keep going. And for people who don't know, I mean, these are tools diabetics can use to be able to monitor their glucose all day. But I was super curious what role glucose was playing in like intermittent fatigue throughout the course of the day. And I was like, oh, I bet I'm having these huge glucose spikes. And it was interesting because I was actually like hypoglycemic most of the day. I would eat and would barely move. And then it would just like tank before dinner. And I was like, oh, okay. So it shifted and informed how I was going to take action because I knew what to do about it. But I am fascinated with these pieces. I'm fascinated with HRV and the things that can influence 100%. That. And so you said something interesting there too, Mark. You were like, okay, well, cardiovascular fitness tied to longevity, elevated HRV tied to longevity. I feel like we hear this continuous messaging, oh, cardiovascular fitness is not that important, because the metric and outcome we're all circulating around is weight loss and weight gain.
Yeah.
Can we just speak to these two pieces here? Because what I'm building towards in our conversation is I want to really know, like, what are the habits of most significant impact and influence on our life? And so I think to dissuade some of the confusion people have, I want to contextualize these two recommendations and these two pieces of advice, because I think they're both important. But can we differentiate the benefits of cardiovascular fitness versus weight loss and the outcomes they're each tied to?
Yeah. I mean, I think you know, we tend to
for
call it
everyone all at once.
This is where reframing some language is sometimes really helpful. Like when we talk about diets, even the word calorie has so much baggage that I often use the term energy. You know, we try to just, and it's amazing how if you change a term, you know, we now have a new, if we don't have a relationship with that new term, then it becomes easier to have conversations. And so the same thing with kind of aerobic fitness, you know, some people have certain preconceptions. And so when we talk conditioning, it's just that effect of, you know, how, you know, what are your fitness levels? Are you able to achieve a certain level of output for, you know, are you able to walk up that hill or again, jog for a certain amount of time? And building aerobic fitness is really impactful for a number of things. I mean, again, we talk about glucose control, talk about inflammation, you know, the discussion around longevity. And so the nice part here, though, you don't have to, if you're not an avid runner, you know, it only takes you really 8 weeks to build up an aerobic base. And then from there, you don't need much in a week, even a session a week, you know, maybe two short sessions to maintain the gains that you've made. And so that's actually a really small investment for something that has a huge, you know, payout at the end. And if you think about meal nutrient timing, so when you exercise, you know, if you do some slow steady state cardio, so like a nice easy run or jog in the morning after you've slept all night and your, you know, your body's used up all the glycogen from your liver to fuel you, so now you're primed to be burning oxidizing fat for fuel, then that's tremendous. So you can do it before, but even afterwards, and even if it's walking, to be fair, but after a meal really helps limit some of those glucose spikes. So if people are struggling with higher blood sugar levels or prediabetes or diabetes, even just walking after a meal is a great strategy. And so that's one. And the nice part with aerobic fitness is it's, you know, how fast can you run a mile? Like, it's a nice metric even year on year to say,
right,
where are we at? It tracks really well with body composition as well. And it tracks really well with longevity. And so we don't have to, again, if you love running, awesome, go for it. If you don't, there are ways of conditioning that don't involve running, right? You can do a whole bunch of different things, different types of activity that get your heart pumping. But if you can find one that you enjoy and then have a metric that you can then just look if you are getting fitter, because unfortunately that's part of the problem of people just do the same movement over and over and over and over again, and we're actually not getting fitter. And that's when it, you know, is unfortunate, because we're investing time now and we're not getting a lot out, and then we're getting frustrated, right?
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the average entrepreneur go-getter in our audience. Mm-hmm. They're female. They're in their 40s. They've got big jobs and missions in the world. They're conscientious with respect to their health. And I feel like two of the universal things right now at this like time period in June of 2021, they're like, all right, I need more energy and I need it stat. And I get it. We've come out of a really difficult time. And I would love to drop that 10 pounds of COVID weight. It just kind of accumulated after 15 months of lockdown. Yeah,
for sure.
And I know we're not going to get specific. We're both naturopathic doctors. We wouldn't do that. But if we were going to build out some of the habits that this cohort could start to include in their day, what would that look like from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the major theme of the book with trying to help people with these sort of simple rules or heuristics that you can use when life is busy and you actually remember these simple rules rather than when life gets busy, it's hard to remember all that granularity that might have been helpful previously, but now it's just gone with the wind. And it's this idea that, yeah, if you can get your morning off to a good start, if you can make sure that things don't go too far off piste in the evenings, you know, 5 nights out of 7. And the last one, if you can set your protein, so achieve an amount of protein, you know, and a good minimum to shoot for is 1.2 grams per kilogram body weight per day. And again, that doesn't just help you now to try to lose some weight. It helps you going forward when we talk longevity again, because, you know, preserving muscle mass is another one, a great marker for healthy aging as we go. So those are, you know, three key areas. And the late eating piece is, again, like breakfast, is a booming area of research. And more than 40% of the calories we consume now are after 6 o'clock, right? So we're consuming the most of our energy right before we're about to sit down and watch Netflix.
Do you know what happens in my life?
So those are the ones we're trying to start to shift. And again, that comes back to behaviors around, you know, if we're always sitting in that same room with a glass of wine, watching Netflix like I do, then I know that that room is going to trigger me to want to do that. So some nights I'm going to go and read a book in a different room. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to, you know, just changing up the environment, you know, is a great and powerful tool to then get you through. So Monday to Thursday now we've, you know, even just eliminating some of that late snacking, all of a sudden that is enough to start moving the dial. And it's nice when you don't have to make a big change and you start to see a tangible result.
It's such great advice. And actually behind me on the shelf, if you're listening, you can't see this, but there's a book that says Willpower Doesn't Work by Benjamin Hardy. And it's the crux of his whole book is that our environment actually dictates our decision-making. So if we're in an environment where we are conditioned to make certain decisions, your willpower is going to stink. And the people with the best willpower are not actually, it's not some psychological fortitude. They're just really good at putting themselves in environments that doesn't provoke these triggers. So
100%. And the best example of that too, I like to tell people, is sitting in your car. Like, do you think about putting your seatbelt on? You're not inspired. You're not motivated. You're not disciplined even. You've done it so many times, it's automatic. And the parallel I draw with the elite athletes on this topic is the fact that we always think, to your point, that they're just really disciplined. That's why they get up at 5:30 and they go for their run. No, they curse under their breath and they don't like it any more than you and I do, but they've gotten to that point where it's literally automatic. They don't wake up and go, should I go for a run or shouldn't I, right? Like the rest of us, they just get up and do it. And ultimately that's what we're trying to get to with a lot of these things, is as best we can, making them just automatic so we don't have to have that decision fatigue, willpower fatigue.
It's so true. So I've taken to, on Sunday nights before I sit down, as I plan out my week, I actually plan out my self-care and my health decisions for the week. So I like plot out when I'm going to do my HIIT workouts. I plot out when I'm going to be like doing lifting, all of this now in my like upgraded home gym. And I plan out all those key pieces. I plan out our meals for the week, even if I'm just like rough scaling it. So I take the decision-making away. Because otherwise I get in the morning and I negotiate in bed. I'm like, well, you didn't sleep well. You should stay in bed a little bit longer. And the whole system falls apart. So it's been a huge game changer for me to just make the commitment on Sunday night when I have no emotional attachment to the other things that are going on in my environment.
That's amazing. Yeah, you decompress for the weekend. You've got a bit of a fresh mindset. You can plan for the week. I mean, it's a bit, and again, it probably doesn't take you nearly that long as it might have done when you started, right? And all of a sudden now you're set up. And it's amazing how much more success we can have, even though it's so simple, right?
And it's even the layering, because for a long time I would have this thing. I was really hard on myself. And so I'd be like, oh, I'm exercising in the morning, no matter what. But my kids had been coming into the room, and I'm sharing this with everybody because I think we go one of two ways. One, we're like, I'm just not going to do it. Or two, we get really hard on ourselves. And I actually don't find that that's helpful either. And so now if my kids come into my bedroom, which they did last night. So I trump sleep over all things. I scratched my workout this morning and I went and stood in front of my Juve and my red light. And so it is like the thing that will replace the exercise. So it's okay to have a double layer to it. Like if you know your life is in a state of disruption, if you know that there's going to be things that get in the way, then pick alternative strategies. But the planning piece has been a game changer for my health and hitting the goals I want to hit.
100%. And that idea of the negative self-talk of like, and it is, that's another parallel between like Olympians, professional athletes, CEOs, the rest of us. Like, and oftentimes those type A's and high performers have a more, let's call it ruthless self-talk than, you know, you would never talk to a friend or loved one like that yet, you know, and maybe it's a generational thing, but even playing sport back in the day, that's how we motivated, right? Your coach would yell at you and scream at you. And that's how you then, okay, you know, we're going to try harder. We're going to do better. And that can quickly unravel when we talk about that idea of the midlife, you know, that U-shaped happiness curve or the lack of sleep, because now, rather than getting that response we're after, we can start to really sabotage all the, you know, that plan that you just so described there. So that's a great point, and the reason why that mindset becomes so key in this whole story.
Yeah, we had this amazing guest on probably 3 months ago, and her name's Dr. Joan Rosenberg, and she's a psychotherapist. She works with, you know, individuals engaged in performance. And she was talking about negative self-talk as actually being the most psychologically damaging habit that we can form and one of the stronger predictors of poor psychological resilience. So it was really fascinating to have this conversation with her. She was just like, if there's one thing you've got to stop in terms of the psychology that you impose on yourself, it's the negative self-talk, because it is not a matter of if, it is when you are going to unravel as a result. It was a really fantastic interview.
100%. And as humans, we're hardwired to have that initial negative, right? I mean, I think it was Harvard University, 50% of the time we're going to default to wandering mind and potentially negative thoughts. So it's like, yeah, if we don't have some strategies in place, we're going to be swimming upstream and the current's pretty strong. So we've got to have those skills in place.
Well, speaking of strategies, what I love about the way you pull all of your books together and all of your teachings is that you'll go really deep in terms of the granular, and you can pull it back and go, here's how this should look in your life. I'm super excited for everyone to get their hands on Peak 40, which I think comes out May 20th, you said?
May 20th, yeah. We're a couple weeks away.
Okay, sounds amazing. So I actually think this is a perfect place in the interview for us to make a transition. So just like we have KPIs in our business, I believe we have them in how we live our life as well. So I've got a few questions for you, Dr. Mark Bubbs.
Let's do it.
Besides your own array of authorship, what is your most recommended books for people like us?
There are a lot of, you know, a number of great books I've read recently. The one that I would recommend people read is called Silence in the Age of Noise. And it's by an explorer adventurer named Erling Kagg, who once spent 50 days trekking across the South Pole at minus 50 Fahrenheit, which is, you know, we think we're having hard days and we think we're having challenges. You know, didn't talk to anyone almost 2 months. And this isn't a spoiler, but it's a great quote from the book. They asked him, you know, how did you do that? How did you trek across, you know, Antarctica and minus 50. And he says, I put one foot in front of the other and I did it enough times. And I just thought that was just so brilliant. It's so ruthlessly effective yet simple, right? That's a great one to check out.
Amazing.
It's a short read too, so it's not going to take up too much time.
Kind of my favorite these days. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite health hack?
Yeah, I mean, this is one where lockdown, I feel like, has gone back to exploring some of these things, because, you know, the movement goes away and all of a sudden the kids are home all day and the one that's really, I feel like, helped me the most over even this period, and if we talk health hacks, is just getting out into nature, which is, you know, again, as I was researching the book, this science around awe and how just being in nature triggers these feelings of awe, which is a strong positive emotional response. And when I thought of like the least, you know, what's the smallest gap to help to support the mindset, and this idea of just walking out to see something in a forest or mountains, or even just scrolling through your social media feed and find some cool pictures. I think so that for me, that's been the big one that then just gets the mindset in the right place. And now, okay, I can start to, you know, move a bit better and eat a bit better after that.
Love it. How would you define your purpose?
That is another great question. And this is definitely one that over the last 15 months had more and more, you know, time to be able to think about. And I've got a Ralph Emerson quote, you know, above here around, you know, what's the impact that we can have in people's lives? And it's like, well, you know, can we laugh often and make other people laugh? Can we, you know, win the affection of children? Can we try to help at least one person and make the world, you know, their world or the world a bit better place? And so I think, you know, that idea of reframing purpose, you know, it feels small, but we, you know, I think that's a really nice place to start for when we talk about purpose. So for me, that's where the North Star is at the moment.
I love it. And finally, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Yeah, that's another really interesting one. I mean, I think everyone can do it. I definitely think there are personality types and people that are just, you know, I listen to Brian Clark's Unemployable. So I definitely think I'm unemployable. So you have just certain types that I think are definitely going to gravitate towards it. But I think the new economy, I think more and more people are, you know, can learn and do, but, so I don't know if I'm sitting on the fence in that one, but by giving you the
okay, there, welcome but. To the Unemployable Club. Yeah. Dr. Mark Bubbs, you're up to so much amazing work in this world. Where can we send people to learn more about what you're doing and get their hands on a copy of the Peak 40?
Absolutely. Yeah. You can check out more info, drbubbs.com/peak40 for all the book related stuff. And I've got a funny last name, so easy to get me on social media at Dr. Bubbs. If you want to fire any questions away, I'm happy to answer.
Sounds amazing. Thanks for being here.
Appreciate it. Thanks again for the time.
I love the work of my friend, Dr. Mark Bubbs. He has this amazing capacity, as I said at the end of the show, to take things from the really granular, super interesting, and pull them out and make them massively actionable for all of us. If you are interested in this conversation, I would love to hear your attitude and your priorities as you map out your peak 40s. Head on over to my Instagram, Dr. Megan Walker. We're conducting a poll and a conversation with respect to what it takes to be at your absolute best self. As always, I'm Megan Walker, wishing you an impactful week ahead, and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday.